an awful lot of work to get it started.
When were you made vice chairman?
In 65.
65.
Yeah. I was vice chairman for 17 years. Mm-hmm. I was a Democrat, but appointed by Rockefeller as vice chairman. And then reappointed by Kerry as vice chairman. And I could understand they weren't going to put it. Rockefeller wasn't going to put a Democrat in as chairman. But there was never, in my experience, there's 25 years of political decision made on that board. A partisan political decision. There are political decisions, but not partisan political decisions. But Frank Moore got running it, and I can remember when Tom Hamilton came, he and Frank Moore and I had lunch together. I was closer to the activity because I was here in Albany than more of the trustees would be. And I brought Tom Hamilton back up to Thurlow Terrace where the office was for the first time. And I said to Tom when he's getting out of the car, "Tom, I want to tell you something. You've got to grab a hold of this ball and run with it, or you're going to be dead." And Tom never got a hold of the ball. You know, Frank was still the dominant factor. He never really got a hold of the ball. Now, that was his fault, I felt, because Sam Gould got a hold of him when he came in under Frank.
Well, he'd been a college president of several times.
But poor Tom Hamilton didn't, so that when he was offered this job at Hawaii, he jumped at it. And he was only there a short time in the university when Tom went. But he never really got a hold of the ball, and he found it very difficult to make tough decisions.
Do you know who brought me in?
No. I can't say. Now, you came in what year?
62. September 62.
62. And where were you before that?
I was dean of Bucknell University.
Dean of Bucknell. What year, when were you appointed, when were you interviewed?
When was I what?
Interviewed for the job and all.
I was interviewed for the job. This is a strange thing. I was not interviewed in Albany for the job. They just wrote and offered it to me and told me that I was to come down September. Well, I don't remember exactly. I guess it probably was in August. I was to report September 4th. But before that, Porter had me come down, and in the office there off to the right of the main entrance to Coe Hall.
At Stony Brook?
Yes, there was a group. This is Planning Fields.
Planning Fields, I remember that.
There was a group of the faculty, and I was simply introduced as the person who was going to take over as acting chief administrative officer and dean of arts and sciences. It left me wondering who really was in charge of appointing me. I went up shortly afterwards and met with Tom Hamilton. And a little later, this was before he left, he said, "You know, be all right with me if you became president of the institution," which was a kind of a queer statement to make, but that's all.
It had to be Harry Porter then.
I think it must have been Harry Porter.
Although John Slocum at the time was in charge of the... Well, not after... Once after Tom Hamilton got there, I don't think John Slocum was. I think Harry Porter...
Was he ever secretary of the Board of Trustees? Was John Slocum?
No.
He wasn't.
Larry Murray was secretary of the Board of Trustees.
Right. All right. And Slocum, then, what was his position?
Well, originally he was dean of four-year colleges. Dean of the university centers. Let's see.
I don't
turn back after 58.
I don't think the university centers were mentioned until the Hill Report.
No, they weren't.
Or the master plan. Of 60.
See, in March of 2758, John Slocum was made vice president for administration.
Oh, I see.
Under Bill Carlson.
I see.
That was 58. Let's see what his title was in 60. Still vice president for administration. He was always vice president of administration, 61.
I see. Mm-hmm. All right.
In 62, he was vice president for administration.
Administration.
Mm-hmm. So he, then Harry Porter became provost of 62 also.
In 62?
I think so. Let's see now. Maybe 61. Provost was vacant in 59. It was vacant in 60. Harry was appointed provost in January 61.
January 61.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm sure, but you know, it wouldn't have been done like that afterwards.
Huh? No.
Can't imagine, you know, anybody in that job getting the appointment at all without being interviewed by the trustees.
I know.
The chancellor.
Right.
That was the growing pains of the university, though, I can tell you that.
I was offered a position of dean of a small college in Iowa, Cornell College. And I went out there and had to sit before two of the faculty committees, as well as be interviewed by the president. And the president made a decision to take me only after the faculty had given the green light, which I think makes a lot of sense.
Well, there was no question about that. But up until 64 or 65, Sam Gould was appointed in 65. 64.
64, I think.
64 he was appointed. He was inaugurated in 65. Sam Gould was appointed. We had a committee of, Tom Hamilton was appointed. I was brand new on the board, and I was on the committee, and there were only four people on the committee.
And they were all trustees.
They were all trustees. Mm-hmm. And they didn't even give a thought to the faculty. Mm-hmm. Now, when Sam Gould was appointed, we had met with council of presidents, we didn't still pay attention to the faculty, the council of presidents, and we had asked the faculty and everybody to submit names. Sam Gould's name was never in the hopper at all. Never came from anybody in the truly sense educational field. I was, at the time, I was chairman of the two-year college committee. And I was meeting with the gal who was secretary of the Board of Higher Education for two-year colleges. At that time, we had the 8 two-year colleges, community colleges in New York City, were part of the state university. Mm-hmm. We afterwards separated them out and they became part of the city university. So that they were managed jointly by the city university and the state university, and so we met together committees to try to keep things on an even keel. And I was meeting with this gal named Ruth Shupp, and she asked me how we were getting along, and there was Charlie Garson, myself, Frank Moore, and Cliff Phelan, and we were the 4 people that were the committee.
Garson was a great person.
Charlie Garson. Charlie was, a little bit of an educational snob. And Charlie got himself in an awful jam. He was a head of the, equivalent of Blue Cross in New York City. And he and his board fixed Charlie Garside up with such a great pension when he retired that Governor Rockefeller had legislation passed so that it could never happen again. And Rockefeller would not appoint Charlie Garside back to the... Charlie was one of those fellows when Tom Dewey was running for president, had an apartment hired in Washington, because he was going to Washington with Dewey. Mm-hmm. And Dewey didn't make it. They had to cancel their apartment. But Charlie and 4 of us, and I was meeting with Ruth, said she asked me how we met him, which we had met with John Perkins from Delaware, and only Katzenbach, and we met 5 or 6 people. And we spent more time talking about salary and fringe benefits than we did about education. And like John Perkins, he went back to Delaware. He left us on a Friday and we thought we were all set. And he went back to call on Monday morning and said, when I told my board, they offered him to stay 5 more years, and he was only 48 at the time. They would give him a guaranteed salary of $25,000, a pension of $25,000 a year, which back in 1964 or so was a good pension, you see. And he had a chauffeur, and he had a home, and much better than we would have here, and he had help and everything else. So they all used it to get more when they went back, because there wasn't a big reason to come here, see. So Ruth said, there's a fellow named Sam Gould here in New York, Jim, that I'm impressed by. And he's with Channel 13. She said, I wish you'd interview him. So when I get back to over there and call Frank Moore, and I told her, I said, just on Ruth's say-so, I said, I work with her a lot. I'd like to.
Now, Ruth was?
Ruth Shepp.
Shepp.
I'd like to interview this Sam Gould. But at that time, Al Urich was president of the Ford Foundation. And the way we worked it most of the time was that Frank would call Al Urich, and Al Urich would call, say, Carl Hartzell and say, hey, they're looking for somebody up in Albany, and you ought to take a look at that job. Mm-hmm. And so we weren't asking you to come, huh? Mm-hmm. And Al did that to Sam Gould, and Sam said, well, I'm going up there to see Jim Allen next week on Tuesday or so. I got a 9 o'clock appointment with him. And he said, so I could be free at 11 o'clock. So we had an appointment with Sam at 11 o'clock at Frank Moore's office. And Frank at that time was president of the...
Go ahead, let me just
president
check.
Of the Rockefeller Foundation. Rockefeller Foundation for Government Affairs. So we met over there, and we had lunch there, and we talked to him from 11 o'clock till 4, and then I brought Sam down to get the bus. And that was 4.5 hours. We didn't spend 15 or 20 minutes talking about salary. Mm-hmm. But we talked about how you could tie this rambling university together. Sam was a communication expert.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
But Sam didn't have a PhD. Mm-hmm. And nobody. So when I get back to my office, I call up Frank Moore and said, "Hey, Frank, as far as I'm concerned, I'd hire Sam Gould today. He's the first man we've met that really seems interested in education only and this job." And Frank agreed. So we got Charlie Garside and Cliff Fail and myself, and we re-interviewed Sam down in New York. Charlie didn't want to take him because he didn't have a PhD. The only, but we insisted that we were going to talk to the presidents on it. And we talked to the presidents on it. And the only president that objected to it was Ben Collins from Albany. And at that time, as far as we were concerned, Ben Collins had, up to that point, had never invited a head of the state university onto his Albany campus. He never joined the university. He was freewheeling all his life beforehand, and he wasn't going to be have any part of the university. So we ignored Jim, what's his name? It's Evan Collins' objection to it. And we hired Sam Gould. Well, two things happened with Sam Gould. One, Rockefeller became in love with him. And Sam could get anything he wanted for the university. And that's when we started to move forward. And Rockefeller put the money in and thought, you know, Sam could get anything we wanted. And he took over from Frank Moore. Frank Moore at that time didn't. He came in and Frank retired in 65. He reached the age of 70 in 65. Cliff Palin became the chairman. I was appointed chairman in 63 or 64, 63 I think it was.
You were appointed chairman?
The vice chairman.
Vice chairman.
When Emily Warner got off the board. I was a vice chairman under Frank Moore for a couple of years, and then Cliff Palin became the chairman, and then Beth Moore became chairman. And she was a great chairman.
She is willing to have me interview her. I think I'll go down and talk
to her. She's a great lady.
Yes.
She's a great lady. Beth and I talked on the phone, I bet you, almost every day of the year. Mm-hmm. We worked together very closely. And we had lots of arguments, lots of fights and everything else, but we were very, very close. And I thought the world of her. She was a real brilliant person, Beth Moore was. But she used to have dinner with Rockefeller, like her and her husband, and Rocky and Happy would have dinner every other Friday night or so together. So we had great contacts with the governor's office.
Good.
Frank Moore was part instrumental with he and Malcolm Wilson making Rockefeller governor. And then Beth Moore, personally, was a personal friend of Nelson Rockefeller's before he became governor. So for those years, we had a great rapport with Nelson Rockefeller.
What has happened since? Let's get back to Stony Brook.
Yeah.
Where did the initiative come from in the early years for the building of Stony Brook? I had the feeling that everything was being planned in Albany, except possibly appointments, which I suggested to Dave Price. And we could get from Dave, if we put our arguments in good shape, pretty much what we wanted within the salary scale. At that time, I think the top was $18,000 for our full professor. Then we had a chance to get Alfred Kazin, who was a very well-known writer. And if we could bring him in, it would be a quite a coup. And he would come. And I talked to Dave about it. And somehow, Dave persuaded, I guess, the trustees to make a, or possibly the Bureau of the Budget, to break the salary scale and call a new category, distinguished professor. Mm-hmm. But they wouldn't do it just for us. Buffalo had to have somebody of the same kind. And so as soon as Buffalo could find somebody, it went through. And they kept the title of the distinguished professor. Money in those days was relatively free for the hiring of faculty, at least for the lines that the enrollment could justify.
Right, yeah, that's right. But you see, Dave Price probably came back at that time. That would be probably 63 or 64, would it?
Yeah.
It was before Sam Gould.
Yes.
And it was in that period when Slocum probably was handling it, but Barry Porter would have more influence on that decision, I think, mm-hmm. than John Slocum did. And he probably convinced Frank Moore, and Frank came to the board and said, all right, but we got to get this support from the budget office. Mm-hmm. And that's where Larry Murray, who was secretary of the board, could go to Norm Hurd. Mm-hmm. And of course, Norm, being an educator himself,
right.
would appreciate that.
Yeah.
And Rockefeller was anxious to make, start creating a great university. So when you went to him and said, hey, this distinguished professor is going to mean a lot to us in the university, well, Rockefeller gave you a lot of support or something like that.
Yeah.
Then after Lee, John Toll became the president, didn't he?
After Lee, I was there for 3 years.
Acting president or full president?
No, I was never full president.
You were.
I did everything.
But everything the president did without the appointment.
Without the title, and I did it for 3 years instead of one.
Right.
And then, in the meantime, we were wondering who would be the president and how. And finally, we had a line for dean of the graduate school. And I told Harry I thought we ought to fill it because we had two graduate programs, physics and chemistry, already accepted, and we had just worked out a system of testing whether we should go into graduate work or not and applied it to our different departments. We didn't want to go up to the central office and be turned down, and we felt we should be able to justify the application for graduate work. So I brought in some people from outside, from Harvard and Brown, and for biology, and from Princeton and NYU, and some other place for English. And the Brown people in Harvard gave us the green light for biology. And the other group said, you're not ready for a PhD, but you are ready for an MA. So I had the librarian, Bill Dix from Princeton, come up. Our collection wasn't good enough to justify it. J. John was interviewed for dean of graduate school. Faculty liked him, but he turned it down. And then there were other people brought in. Harry brought in Lansford.
Oscar Lansford.
And the faculty didn't particularly care for him. So the council didn't go ahead. Then Judge Sullivan said, what do you think about John Toll? And I told the judge, I thought he'd make a good president. Would you go down and interview and ask him if he was interested? I said, sure. So I went down to Maryland, stayed overnight with him, and we talked about it, and he indicated he was interested. So I came back and reported on that. And then he came up for an interview with the people in Albany. Gould wasn't there yet.
No, that's right.
And I briefed Johnny for 8 hours at Crow Cottage as to the nature of the institution and the people that he would have to talk with in Albany. And everything was on hold after that until Gould came in.
Yeah.
And Jed Sullivan wrote Gould and said, don't go looking for a president for Stony Brook until you've seen John Toll. And first thing we knew that Gould had approved his being president.
John. John was a great guy. John was a lovable guy.
Yes, he was.
Huh? He really was. He would drive his superiors up the wall.
Yeah.
I never thought he was the greatest administrator in the world. And many times Sam Gould would be mad at the devil, and Ernie Boyer would be going to start raving mad about John, because John wasn't doing this or wasn't doing that. And John lived, lots of times I thought he lived in a dream world. And many times we had meetings, and Ernie would say, he's got to go. Well, Ernie, if you feel that way, then he's got to go, but you got to make that decision. But Ernie never could make the decision. John finally made the decision himself.
Yeah.
John finally made the decision himself, and that was... it was tough at the time because then they
let me just
yeah